from deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, happy Mardi Gras weekend. I know you won't hear that anywhere else unless you're in New Orleans or Mobile, which claims to have been the original originating point for Mardi Gras in the United States. Good luck with that, Mobile. I'm looking for the crowns. Anyway, that's the happy news. Now let's get to the rest of the events of the week. No doubt you have seen excerpts, if not full serps, of the conversation between Ukraine President Zelensky and U.S. President, what's his name? Billy? Oh, Trump. And we'll get to more of that as the program wears on. But here at the top, I wanted to make one observation. The event didn't quite go off the rails at the beginning, but it started to when Vice President J.D. Vance piped up more than halfway through the thing and started poking the guy that lives next to the bear, if not the bear, it is certainly not the bear itself. But earlier in the conversation, so-called, they were taking questions from reporters, and one reporter piped up with this.
And my second question for President Zelensky, do you ever, why don't you wear a suit? Why don't you wear a suit? You're the highest level in this country's office, and you refuse to wear a suit. Just want to see if you, do you own a suit?
Yeah, problems.
A lot of Americans have problems with you not
really?
Respecting
I don't have such, I will wear a costume after this war will finish.
Okay. And now, I may be misremembering the following, but it's my clear recall that a few days earlier in this sequence of events, there was another visitor to the White House who didn't wear a suit, who wore a black t-shirt and a black baseball cap. Nobody asked him why he wasn't wearing a suit or whether he owned a suit. He was too rich for them to ask that question. That's the way it goes. Hello, welcome to the show.
Give me a reason to live.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you, well, taking time out from Mardi Gras to welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the bees.
Let me tell you about the bees. Yeah!
Yeah! Honeybee officials, these are officials who deal with honeybees, they're not honeybee officials. Honeybees don't have... They're raising the alarm about severe colony losses over the past few months. The extent of the bee deaths is still being tallied. But one estimate suggests more than a million colonies have died. This from Minnesota Public Radio. Quote, no one is aware of the massive nature of this year's die-off, says Steve Ellis, a Minnesota beekeeper, adding, it is unprecedented, unquote. Over the past 20 years, commercial beekeepers have often lost 50% or nearly 50% of their bees over the winter. But Ellis, who's president of the National Pollinator Stewardship Council, I ran for that, said he's hearing from beekeepers who've losses ranging from 70 to 100% this year. That's all your bees. One immediate repercussion is there aren't enough bees to fully pollinate California's almond crop, or as they call them up there where they grow them, almonds. The almond crop will be impacted due to a shortage of bees in a way that has never happened before, said Ellis, who takes his bees to California to pollinate almond orchards. In a statement earlier this month, the Almond Board of California, I didn't run for that, said it was aware of alarming reports of nationwide honeybee colony losses as beekeepers prepared for the pollination season. Honeybee organizations are collecting data to determine the extent of the losses. A voluntary online survey conducted by Project Apis M, named for the Apis mellifera honeybee, found, quote, severe and sudden, unquote, colony losses. According to a release recently, the nonprofit estimates nearly 1.25 million colonies have been lost since June last year. Initial survey results of colony losses suggest that commercial beekeepers may have lost in excess of 60% of their bees. The scale of these losses is completely unsustainable, unquote, Zach Browning, a fourth-generation commercial beekeeper from North Dakota, board chairman of Project Apis M. I didn't even put in an... Commercial beekeepers have struggled with bee losses for about 20 years since a widespread sudden die-off was labeled colony collapse disorder, with capital letters for the C, C, and D. Researchers believe exposures to pesticides, loss of flowering habitat, and pathogens all contributed to past losses. In its new release, Project Apis M said the trends of this die-off resemble past colony collapse disorder events, quote, and may impact pollination services and food security, unquote. Your food may be insecure. It may be shaking in its colanders. News of bees, ladies and gentlemen. And now...
Looks like musk love.
More than 20 civil service employees resigned this week from billionaire Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, a non-existent department, saying they were refusing to use their technical expertise to, quote, dismantle critical public services, unquote. We swore to serve the American people and uphold our oath to the Constitution across presidential administrations, the 21 staffers wrote in a joint resignation letter, a copy of which was obtained by the Associated Press. They can't even get into the White House now, so the Associated Press has to, you know, get these letters. Quote, however, it has become clear that we can no longer honor those commitments, unquote, the statement. The employees also warned many of those enlisted by Musk to help him slash the size of the federal government were political ideologues who did not have the necessary skills or experience for the task ahead of them. let alone for what's behind them. Don't look. The mass resignation of engineers, data scientists, designers, and product managers is a temporary setback for Musk and the president's tech-driven purge of the federal workforce. It comes amid a flurry of court challenges seeking to stall, stop, or unwind efforts to fire or coerce thousands of government workers out of their jobs. In a statement, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was dismissive of the mass resignations. Quote, anyone who thinks protest lawsuits and lawfare will deter President Trump must have been sleeping under a rock for the past several years, she said. President will not be deterred. I said the president will not be deterred. He may be the chief, but he will not be deterred. He will not be deterred from delivering on the promises he made to make our federal government more efficient and more accountable to the hardworking American taxpayers, said Leavitt. Musk posted on X that the story was fake news and suggested that the staffers were Dem political holdovers who would have been fired had they not resigned. You can't quit. The staffers who resigned had worked for the United States Digital Service said their duties were being integrated into DOGE. Their former office was established under President Obama after the botched rollout of healthcare.gov. You may remember that, or you may not. All previously held senior roles at such tech companies as Google and Amazon wrote in their resignation letter that they joined the government out of a sense of duty to public service. Trump's empowerment of Musk upended that. The day after Trump's inauguration, the staffers wrote, they were called into a series of interviews that foreshadowed the secretive and disruptive work of DOGE. According to the staffers, people wearing White House visitors' badges, some of whom would not give their names, grilled the nonpartisan employees about their qualifications in politics. Some made statements that indicated they had a limited technical understanding. Many were young and seemed guided by ideology and fandom of Musk and not improving government technology. Quote, several of these interviewers refused to identify themselves, asked questions about political loyalty, attempted to pit colleagues against each other, and demonstrated limited technical ability, the staffers wrote in their letter. This process created significant security risks, unquote. Earlier this month, about 40 staffers in the office were laid off. The firings dealt a blow to the government's ability to administer and safeguard its own technological footprint, they wrote. Quote, these highly skilled civil servants were working to modernize Social Security, veteran services, tax filing, healthcare, disaster relief, student aid, and other critical services. The resignation letter states, it goes on, quote, their removal endangers millions of Americans who rely on these services every day. The sudden loss of their technology expertise makes critical systems and America's data less safe. Roughly one-third of the 65 staffers who remained at the Digital Service, or DOGE, quit on Tuesday rather than put on DOGE T-shirts. Quote, we will not use our skills as technologists to compromise core government systems, jeopardize Americans' sensitive data, or dismantle critical public services. We will not lend our expertise to carry out or legitimize DOGE's actions, unquote. Oh, they are so fired now. Meanwhile, visitors to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's headquarters in Washington, D.C., got some unpleasant viewing this week. TV screens across the building began showing a deep fake video of President Trump, not the one you've seen of him in Gaza. No, this is of President Trump kissing and sucking Elon Musk's toes. This is from the British Tech Journal, or British Toe Journal, the Register. The AI-generated footage have been circulating online over the weekend on social media, but the video was displayed on monitors at HUD on Monday morning, along with the message, "Long live the real king," unquote. HUD staff reportedly resorted to unplugging the screens after failing to get the video removed from sight. The agency is investigating. Quote, another waste of taxpayer dollars and resources, said the HUD spokesperson. Appropriate action will be taken for all involved. The video, the Register points out, is a pretty bad deepfake. Musk has two left feet. They say this is something not seen outside of comedy classic Best in Show. All right. And also from the Register, SpaceX has published an explanation for the debris from the Falcon 9 second stage that fell over Poland last week. Because of an oxygen leak, the expected deorbit burn didn't occur, resulting in a burn for Poland. The second stage that came down was from a mission launched beginning of last month to deploy still more Starlink satellites into low Earth orbit. Well, you can still see it. While the landing of the first stage was a success, the deorbit burn of the second stage didn't occur. On February 19th, the stage made an uncontrolled entry over Poland, and I guess that means into it, lighting up the sky and depositing debris in the country. Well, there's always a price for a light show. There were no injuries or substantial property damage. More down to luck than good judgment, according to the Register. This is the third time since July last year that a SpaceX Falcon 9 upper stage didn't perform as planned. Only one of these situations resulted in a loss of mission. Companies said there were no toxic materials in the debris that fell over Poland last week, but advised anyone coming across bits of the second stage to leave it alone and contact authorities. It said it is working closely with the government of Poland on recovery and cleanup efforts. SpaceX has launched 10 Falcon 9 rockets in February alone. The first stage of the rocket is designed to be reused, but SpaceX must manufacture a new second stage for every launch. Why don't they get Doge working on that? SpaceX said, quote, the teams are actively assessing root cause of the source of the leak, have already implemented mitigation for future flights. What, a flying trash bag? That would be good. As the pace of launches increases for SpaceX's workhorse Falcon 9, the upper stage issues are a sign of strain beginning to show in the company's operations. Like maybe the head of the company should check it out when he's got a chance. News of Musk love.
This is your FBI.
Newly installed FBI Director Kash Patel, who's proclaimed plans to overhaul the nation's premier law enforcement agency have rattled many within the Bureau, has proposed enhancing the FBI's ranks with help from the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the martial arts entertainment game whose wealthy CEO, Dana White, helped boost Trump's re-election, according to sources who were told of Patel's proposal. On a teleconference Wednesday with the heads of the FBI's 55 field offices, Patel suggested he wants the FBI to establish a formal relationship with the UFC, which could develop programs for agents to improve their physical fitness, said sources who'd been briefed on the call. The virtual meeting with each field office's special agent in charge has long been a weekly occurrence, but this week's call was the first led by Patel. Within hours of that call, word of Patel's UFC proposal spread to current and former FBI officials around the country. Quote, if they're trying to up their physical fitness, the UFC is very specific in their fitness, said a former special agent in charge of the FBI's Newark, New Jersey office. It's not clear exactly what Patel would want UFC to do or provide to help improve fitness among FBI ranks. Though Patel's UFC proposal stood out to some who heard about the meeting, He addressed a range of issues on the call. He tried to calm some of the concerns among FBI agents after the Justice Department last month demanded a list of the thousands of agents who aided investigations stemming from January 6th and that love-in at the Capitol. It was a day of love, President Trump said at the time, which just suggested to me that he likes his love rough. There were also concerns about Patel's recent announcements that as many as 1,500 employees at FBI headquarters would be assigned to field offices. Last week's controversial email from the Office of Personnel Management demanding that all federal employees list what they'd accomplished over the previous week or face termination only added to concerns within the FBI, sources said. During Wednesday's call, Patel expressed his own concerns about that email and with confusing follow-up messages from the Trump administration's DOGE effort. Don't play dogeball, which has been guided by Elon Musk. Doesn't the UFC have a lot of theatricality to it? Maybe that's what he wants FBI agents to have more. Theatricality. After all, this is your FBI. Now back to the subject we started with on this program, that sort of earth-shaking meeting, maybe it just shook the moon, between President Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, how'd he get in there, and the President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. One of the many highlights of the meeting was when Vance said this to Zelensky.
Have you said thank you once
this
entire meeting? No, in this entire meeting, have you said thank you?
That apparently is not a reference to the many times that Zelensky has said thank you to the United States, the people of this country, for our assistance to his country. But even more interesting, it sounded like he hadn't been paying attention to about 20 minutes earlier in that very meeting when Zelensky said this.
So thank you very much.
We want to get that ended, right?
Yeah, of course.
So thank you very much. It was quick, easy to miss, but a good way to make friends.
Direct from Mar-a-Lago, my weekend White House away from the White House. Although it's better than the White House, but I can't stay here all the time, where the fake news would go fake crazy. This is your favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Bacon. The pigs don't even know it's gone. So it turns out, even though I'm president and I can pick the press pool to get the coverage that I deserve, I can still do these messages, because who's going to stop me? And today I'm still seething about the disrespect shown to me and to you by the little so-called president of so-called Ukraine. He so little he makes Secretary of State Marco look big. This guy pretended he didn't know what I meant when I said, quote, "You don't have the cards," and I can unquote there, although I don't have to. So for President Zelensky and everybody else at the end of the alphabet, here's what I meant. You don't have four aces. You don't have queens. You don't have kings. You don't even have jacks. Most importantly, you don't have jack. This guy is such a little pipsqueak. He thinks he can talk to me like an equal, like I'm the president of the country, and so is he. So I've got news for Mr. Zelensky. Yes, I'm president of the strongest country on the planet, or if Elon has its way, on any planet. And he's the president of nothing, a country that started out 2-bit and has been sinking in value faster than Melania's meme coin, which is a shame, because it's still a better investment than half the stocks on the NASDAQ, or the NASDAQ, whatever they call it. So if Mr. Zelensky wants the United States to help him end his stupid war, he better come back to me hat in hand, which means, first of all, he's got to get a hat. And he has to say that all he wants is peace, because war is something the Israelis can do, and the Danish, if they try to hold on to Greenland. Greenland's rare earths would make Ukraine's rare earths look like the least rare earths on Earth, or if Elon has its way, like rare Marses. I'll be making a speech this week before a joint session of Congress, like a State of the Union, but better. So until then, see you next time.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Tires. Born flat for extra miles. So long. And because, from New Orleans, this is the show. Just wanted to make sure you knew that. And because things move so rapidly in the flood the zone pattern espoused by Steve Bannon, it may have slipped everybody's minds already that the week started with a backlash to Donald Trump. After he created, or shared, sorry, he didn't create it, an AI created it somehow, a video of him sipping cocktails with a topless Benjamin Netanyahu in Gaza in an imagining of Palestine in the future. The video presented a computer-generated vision of Trump's property development plans for Gaza, under which he said he would clean out the population of about 2 million people. Named the Riviera of the Middle East Plan, the proposal has been criticized as a blueprint for ethnic cleansing. The footage shows the strip transformed into a Dubai-style resort. Dubai, everybody, with skyscrapers and luxury yachts. Children play on the beach as money rains down and bearded belly dancers gyrate on the sand. Trump is presented as a revered icon in the footage. A boy walks along holding a golden balloon of the president's head, and a towering dictator-style statue of Trump overlooks a city street. Elon Musk, you've heard about him in this broadcast, appears several times eating flatbread and later dancing as dollar bills fall from the sky. Musk's Tesla cars cruise through the glossy streets. After the president shared the footage, which includes the caption, "Gaza 2025, what's next?" he faced a backlash on his social media platform. One Truth Social user wrote, I could not be a bigger supporter of President Trump, but this particular video is in very poor taste. Another wrote, I hate this. I love our president, but this is horrible. Unquote. The video might have gone down particularly badly with Trump's Christian supporters. Several comments referenced the idolatry of the golden statue. Others lamented a scene showing Trump in a nightclub alone with a woman dressed as a belly dancer as a crowd looks on. It's not immediately clear who had made the video, although it had been shared online previously by other accounts unrelated to the White House. Trump shared it without comment. What appeared to be AI-generated lyrics, attention Ralph, accompanied the images, quote, Donald's coming to set you free, bringing the light for all to see. No more tunnels, no more fear. Trump Gaza's finally here. Trump Gaza's shining bright, golden future, a brand new life. That's a bad rhyme. Feast and dance, the deal is done. Trump Gaza, number one. Unquote. Yes, it does sound like AI-generated lyrics. It sounds like the problem is they just chose the wrong song to go with that video.
Let me take you on a journey, just an unbelievable trip, down to your personal cabana, your own plot on the Gaza Strip. There's a beautiful view of the ocean, weather to make you flip. No pesky Palestinians, just you and the Gaza Strip. It's a tabula rasa, whatever the hell that means. It's a fabulous five-star plaza, so I'll meet you down in Gaza. We'll be in all the magazines. There'll be some talk of protests, but they'll just be a blip. Leave it all to the valet at your mansion on the Gaza Strip. Out Rivieraing the Riviera, no taxes on any tip. You'll enjoy the classiest strippers down on the Gaza Strip. It's a tabula rasa, whatever the hell that means. It's a fabulous five-star plaza, so I'll meet you down in Gaza. We'll get you there by any means.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is feeling a bit tropical here in New Orleans, but elsewhere and everywhere, it's a crypto winter. More than $800 billion has been wiped off global cryptocurrency markets in recent weeks, according to the Financial Times. The enthusiasm that swept the crypto industry after the election victory of the current president ebbs away. The price of Bitcoin dropped as much as 3.5% middle of this week, taking its losses over the past month to 15%. Other tokens have suffered even bigger losses. Crypto assets are swept up in a broader sell-off in risk assets, so-called, and the largest ever cryptocurrency theft shakes confidence in the industry. We shared that with you last week, I guess. Traders have also grown frustrated that Trump has not moved faster to enact some of the reforms he promised on the campaign trail. Quote, the slower than anticipated rollout of any major pro-crypto policies has led to disappointment, according to Gadi Chait, investment manager at Xapo Bank, X-A-P-O. Sure you've heard of it. Check your memory. The nominal value of the crypto industry has fallen $800 billion worth from its high in January, according to CoinMarketCap data. Investors pulled nearly $1 billion from Bitcoin exchange traded funds early this week, according to Bloomberg, as the deepening slump sparked a record exodus from the vehicles that helped power crypto prices to record highs late last year. Trump's barrage of tariffs has also spooked investors, sending them racing out of risky assets, including crypto. The president's most high-profile move so far was, as you may recall, launching a so-called meme coin. In January, the token's price has plunged 83% from a brief high, and Trump faced widespread backlash over its launch. The managing partner at a venture capital firm called Compound said Trump dumped meme coins, paving the way for other politicians to follow suit, and effectively destroyed the market for a few months at least. Recent high-profile scandals are also looming large over the industry. A meme coin promoted by Argentina's President Milei this month, I think they mean February, rapidly plunged in value, leaving investors facing steep losses. Melania Trump's meme coin launch has also drawn criticism. And wait, there's more. Crypto neobank. Wouldn't you want your money in a neobank? Infini lost $49.5 million in a hack allegedly carried out by a former developer abusing administrative privileges. This according to Decrypt.co. The attacker who'd worked on Infini's contract leveraged their privileges after the project was completed to drain funds from the platform, according to the blockchain analytics platform Cyvers. In a report shared with Decrypt, smart contract audit firm Quill Audits confirmed the exploit resulted from, quote, compromised access and privilege escalation, unquote. And from thestreet.com, hackers drained more than $4 million from the public crypto wallet of Mask Network founder Suji Yan. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard. The 29-year-old entrepreneur said they had attended a birthday party where he briefly left his phone unattended, potentially enabling the hacker to gain access to the wallet. Quote, I was in a private gathering with a dozen friends. My phone was away for some minutes when using the restroom, he said on social media. I trust my friends, but this is a nightmare for anyone. According to blockchain security firm Cyvers, hackers distributed the funds across six different wallet addresses after converting Yan's cryptocurrency into Ether-linked tokens. Not much of a conversion, if you ask me, but you didn't. The high-profile hack caused Mask Network's share price to plummet, a drop of more than 7% in 24 hours. And of course, the hack follows last week's $1.5 billion Bybit hack. Hacks are common in the crypto industry, according to The Street. The industry has experienced frequent security breaches and thefts, from North Korean hackers to unscrupulous individuals, since the creation of digital assets. This year, crypto crime is projected to surpass $51 billion. Dollars? What are those? According to blockchain analytics firm Chainalysis. Quote, crypto crime isn't just growing, it's fundamentally transforming. According to Chainalysis, what once revolved primarily around cybercrime has expanded into a vast, sophisticated, illicit economy deeply intertwined with national security, geopolitical conflicts, and transnational criminal enterprises engaged in drug, human, and wildlife trafficking, as well as violent crime, unquote. Good place to put your money. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, once again, the BBC has apologized, this time after a documentary on the Israel-Gaza war featured narration from the son of a senior Hamas official. The corporation has removed the show, Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone, from its streaming service, BBC iPlayer, acknowledging, quote, unacceptable flaws, unquote. The film follows four teenage boys through the conflict in Gaza. Pro-Israel protesters have been in uproar after they discovered one of the 13-year-old subjects, Abdullah al-Yazouri, is the son of Hamas Deputy Minister of Agriculture. In a statement following a BBC board review, the corporation said, quote, BBC News takes full responsibility for these flaws and the impact these have had on the corporation's reputation, adding that there are no plans to broadcast the program again in its current form or return it to iPlayer. The full apology says that while production company HoYo Films have assured us that no payments were made to members of Hamas or its affiliates, either directly in kind or as a gift, the BBC is seeking additional assurance around the budget of the program and will undertake a full audit of expenditure. HoYo Films acknowledged that the BBC was not informed of Abdullah al-Yazouri's, Hamas ties. A separate statement from the BBC board added, quote, the subject matter of the documentary was clearly a legitimate area to explore, but nothing is more important than trust and transparency in our journalism. While the board appreciates that mistakes can be made, the mistakes here are significant and damaging to the BBC, unquote. A review into the film has been launched. Deadline Ottawa, the Crown Indigenous Relations Minister, apologized this week on behalf of the federal government of Canada, for its role in the Dundas Harbor relocations between 1934 and 1948, saying it is, quote, long overdue, quote, again. The government of Canada deeply regrets the decision that led to your relocations and the suffering that resulted from them. He's talking to members of the Inuit grouping. We, he continues, we recognize and acknowledge the profound harm done to your families, your communities, and your way of life, he said to those gathered in Arctic Bay, quote, for taking you from your homes and families, for the hardships you endured, for the displacement and ruptures of kinships with the land, and for the promises that were broken, we offer our sincerest apology. We are sorry, unquote. The relocations he mentioned were part of Canada's strategy to maintain a national security presence in the Arctic. More than 50 people were removed by the federal government from their ancestral homes, causing harm to Inuit communities, a harm that lingers to this day. Dateline Cedar City, Utah, an investigation into an Iron County commissioner requesting special treatment for his incarcerated son has resulted in a call for professional boundaries to be reinforced. I think this is not the time in history to be talking about that, but an emotional Iron County Commissioner Paul Cousins apologized for his actions at a commission meeting this week. His son, Blake Floyd, was arrested on January 15th, charged 2 days later with theft and 10 counts of unlawful dealings by a fiduciary. Those are second-degree felonies. Blake, the former treasurer and chairman of the Iron County Republican Party, is a licensed real estate agent and broker. He's accused of embezzling almost $2 million from two accounts belonging to the Cedar Bend Homeowners Association that he manages through his business. It is called Stress-Free Property Management. According to court documents, police noted in a booking affidavit that Cousins has also caused multiple members of the public to fear for their lives and those of their families if he's released, to the point they want to leave town. Maybe they got another reason. You know, it's Utah. A lawsuit was filed by Velocity Holdings late January against Blake Cousins Holdings, which was doing business as Stress-Free Property Management. The lawsuit contends Cousins was entrusted to manage the financial account of the Cedar Bend Homeowners Association and to collect assessments and oversee other property management responsibilities, but instead engaged in unauthorized withdrawals, transfers, and the creation of multiple accounts under the name of Cedar Bend Homeowners Association while maintaining sole access to the funds. His father, Iron County Commissioner Paul, went to the jail the day after the kid Blake was booked and, quote, allegedly requested special treatment for his son's medical conditions, which raised concerns among jail staff, unquote, a summary of an internal investigation. Paul, quote, interjected himself in all aspects of the approval of medical accommodations of his son, according to a timeline of what happened. The report says multiple staff members of the jail felt uneasy about the commissioner's presence and some, quote, feared for their job security if they failed to follow his requests. The report into all this says, quote, the findings suggest a need to reinforce professional boundaries, unquote. This week, Paul, the father of Blake, addressed the issue during a county commission meeting. Quote, it's been kind of a hard process because I'm a commissioner and having a son incarcerated, I don't know all the rules. As you can imagine, with the meetings I've attended for a long time about building a new jail and knowing that one of our family members might be resided or might be resident there, it's been hard. The commissioner said his son had asked him and his wife to bring distilled water for his CPAP machine. But when they arrived, a jail staffer informed him they couldn't accept it. Quote, I get it, but I think I got wound up that night. They can't accept stuff from the public. I know I didn't handle the situation well that night, he said. He said he was emotional. Quote, I was deeply concerned for my son's health, and I reacted inappropriately. But never did I threaten anyone's job. I apologized then, and I apologize now for my actions, unquote. The Arizona Wildcats student section, Zona Zoo, has apologized to Brigham Young University and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for the derogatory chant following last Saturday's basketball game. After BYU won, members of the Zona Zoo began chanting, F the Mormons, is all. Arizona's athletic director, Desiree Reed Francois, apologized after the, quote, unacceptable chant occurred, unquote. The Zona Zoo apology went into greater detail, noting they had addressed the issue internally to prevent future such incidents. Quote, the actions by students were unacceptable and are not reflective of the 14,000 Zona Zoo members or our Zona Zoo crew. Zoo crew, we have taken steps on our end to address the situation internally to prevent future incidents like this from ever happening again. We want to apologize to BYU men's basketball, members of the LDS faith, and all fans for the words and actions after the game. As a student section, while our job is to make the stadium a tough place to play, the arena, our mission is to bear down, capital letters, but they're not the Bears, are they? With pride and provide a welcoming environment to all. Jamie Dimon, the head of Chase Bank, is apologizing for using some particularly salty language about work-from-home policies. He tackled an increasingly combative issue for workers and employers across the United States, but he's not backing down on requiring JPMorgan Chase employees to return to the office. The CEO of America's largest bank told CNBC that he grew frustrated when an employee at a Columbus, Ohio town hall 2 weeks ago asked about a petition signed by more than 1,000 employees demanding that the company keep its hybrid work model in place. In response, Diamond said 2 weeks ago, "Don't waste time on it. I don't care how many people sign that effing petition. Don't give me this S that work from home Friday works," unquote, from a recording obtained by Reuters. He explained to CNBC that he sometimes gets overly emotional at town halls, but acknowledged, "I should never curse ever, and I shouldn't get angry, and stuff like that," unquote. Dateline Meridian, Idaho. On Sunday, alas, the CEO of Engineering Structures Incorporated, ESI, issued a new statement apologizing for offensive gestures made during a company-wide event at the Boise Center. In that statement, the official head, the CEO of the company, acknowledges that the gestures in question were indeed Nazi salutes. Quote, "I now fully recognize that this gesture is not only inappropriate, but also profoundly hateful," he said in a written statement on company letterhead. He continued, quote, "That salute is one of the most recognizable of all Nazi symbols, and when used, represents hate, oppression, and unspeakable atrocities," unquote. He's Thomas Hill, CEO. He had taken the stage of a state of the company event on February 20th, and during his time on stage, he participated in a political skit that mimicked Elon Musk and President Trump's signature dancing. According to his first statement, during that skit, Hill gave two Nazi salutes back to back. The blowback was swift. According to Hill, the company will now create a task force to review workplace practices, including communications and events. ESI is licensed to operate in 41 states. They've completed many major projects in Idaho, including work for universities, hospitals, and chain retailers. I guess that's where you get your chains these days. And Dateline Northern Ireland, a senior Catholic bishop has apologized to the alleged victims of a deceased parish priest. In his statement, the Bishop of Down and Connor, Alan McGuckian, said his diocese had received several credible allegations of sexual abuse against Father Patrick O'Neill. The statement revealed that an allegation of sexual abuse of a minor was received by the diocese way back in 2004, and another similar allegation was made recently. In addition, three allegations of sexual abuse of adults, manipulation, and abuse of power were made against Father O'Neill and received by the diocese in years in the early 2000s. Following the allegation made in 2004, Father O'Neill was stepped aside from his ministry. He remained permanently out of ministry till his death in November 2009. Bishop McGuckian has said at the time that O'Neill was asked to step aside, quote, "A statement was drafted by the diocese at this time, but was not issued. This statement would have empowered other victims to come forward. This failure to issue a statement has also compounded the hurt endured by his victims and their families." He said the failure to issue a statement is a matter of deep regret by the diocese. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same radio stations and on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Yeah, let's do this again next week. What do you say? I can't hear you. The email address from this program, I could hear you there. Your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. Kind of sounding old, even to me. And a playlist of all the music heard here on All Yours at HarryShearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh here at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long. From the home of Mardi Gras, the Crescent City.